Hey folks, I'm John Rich. Just as wokeness and censorship have subverted the music industry, they've also crushed free expression on social media. Censors have suspended social media users, canceled entire news channels, obliterated online discussion platforms, and even banished a sitting American president from big tech platforms. Well, I'm here to say there's a place for you. A place where patriots can speak freely without fearing some unknown, unseen speech enforcer that wants to shut you down. That place is called Truth Social, a free speech social media platform that hosts breaking news, TV streaming channels, and powerful commentary on all the issues facing our great nation. Break free of big tech and make your voice heard. Join me on an uncancelable platform where I like to debut my songs, and where you can read exclusive commentary from our 45th president, Donald J. Trump. I'll see you on Truth Social, where freedom lives.
Download the Truth Social app or visit truthsocial.com.
If you think you need a new roof, think again. RoofMax can add up to 15 years of life by rejuvenating your current roof at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Roofs simply aren't made the way they used to be. If your roof has black streaks, looks rough, or has granules in the gutters, your roof is wearing out too soon and it's going to cost you a bundle. Put off your roof replacement for at least 5 years guaranteed. Call 1-855-ROOFMAX now to see if your roof qualifies. 1-855-ROOFMAX.
You know, I got to say, at school, it turns out school is hard. It turns out that it's not just the alpha and the omega. There's 22 other letters in between, and they all make different words and different declensions. And I, for some reason, forgot that I was an Episcopalian and didn't have to know any of this stuff. And I'm taking this Greek class and it's killing me.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Read my lips.
It's the Ricochet Podcast with James Lilex, myself, Stephen Hayward, himself, and joining us again, brother Rob Long. So let's have ourselves a podcast.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. And what's your name?
I'm Matt.
Matt.
Nice to meet you.
Chris had to ask who you are because you have to be careful.
Never be too careful.
I agree. You'll never get bored with winning. We never get bored.
Welcome, everybody. It's the Ricochet Podcast, number 714. I'm James Lilex, coming to you today without a microphone. I think somebody stole it. I mean, I know things are bad in the newspaper industry, but I don't think we're at the point yet where people start pawning things they find in people's desks. But we'll know. We'll figure out exactly what happens. I'm coming to you live from MacBook Air and coming to you from, well, from someplace, an undisclosed place where I believe there was ceremonies and rituals, perhaps, maybe, that he will explain to it. His brother Rob and Stephen Hayward as well, too. Stephen, Rob, welcome to both of you. Good to be here.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, good to see you, James. Yeah, you do look like you're in some dark dungeon or something.
Yeah,
we should let everybody know that this that the low quality audio for James Lilex is like a specifically designed torture for him. Like nobody else would care, but I know it's killing him because I can see little veins. The video is good enough. I can see the veins on your forehead just kind of getting like, oh. I'm getting whatever. I don't even know what the words would be, but nope. I'm sure
that's actually the testosterone supplement. So, Rob, you're back. Where you been?
Well, as you know, James, I am I'm a student now. I went back to school. I'm at the Princeton Theological Seminary. I am a graduate student surrounded by incredibly smart young people who have these incredibly moist brains that they can remember Greek stuff. I idiotically have elected to take Greek. I don't have to take Greek to be an ordained Episcopal minister, which is sort of my, I think, my eventual end here. But I did it anyway because I like, you know, Greek's important. And, you know, if you don't know a little bit of Greek, then you're always at the mercy of the people who do. And it's not a very good thing.
Oh, I find myself all the time at the mercy of people who know Greek.
Well, you do. Like, you know, let's see, you're studying the New Testament. You find yourself thinking to yourself, well, wait, what was that word? How did they use it like two verses back and two verses forward?
Well, let me give you a perfect example of that would be the and there is dispute about this. Correct me if I'm wrong. there should be dispute about the parable, the homily about the it being easier for a rich man to easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to go in.
There are many interpretations of that.
Right.
The beautiful parable.
But they seem to center around mistranslation and misunderstanding perhaps what they mean by the eye of a cat on the rope and the rest of it.
So the richer you are, the more insistent you are that there are some textual translation issues there. That you could tell pretty much someone's net worth by their interpretation of that verse. The most famous one, I think, is most famous prayer, maybe one of the most famous prayers ever, the Lord's Prayer, where if you are a you're kind of on our side, kind of larger debate, a Western Christian, Augustine Latin kind of Christian, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's deliver us from evil. And if you're kind of on the Eastern side, the Greek church fathers like Cyprian or Origen, those people, you read that not as the neuter noun evil, but as the masculine. So deliver us from the evil one. And I may seem little, but it's like, but then you look back, okay, well, how was this used, in the verses before? How does it used in the rest of Mark and all that stuff, Matthew, sorry. And like, you get into all that stuff and like, this stuff I can do, by the way. This is not my problem. My problem is the second declension of Greek adjectives and the special cases of the word otos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm doing all right. And the other thing I've discovered, and this we could talk about current events, apparently there's an election going on, is that I've discovered that being a writer professionally for 40 years is, 35 years, 30-something plus years. It helps you to realize you could sit down and write, I can turn out, you want 1,200 words in an hour, I can do that. It's my job, I can do that. But they don't want it interesting. They want it like they want you to support your thesis with facts and citations. And I find that rude.
Hey, folks, I'm John Rich. Just as wokeness and censorship have subverted the music industry, they've also crushed free expression on social media. Censors have suspended social media users, canceled entire news channels, obliterated online discussion platforms, and even banished a sitting American president from big tech platforms. Well, I'm here to say there's a place for you, a place where patriots can speak freely without fearing some unknown, unseen speech enforcer that wants to shut you down. That place? It's called Truth Social, a free speech social media platform that hosts breaking news, TV streaming channels, and powerful commentary on all the issues facing our great nation. Break free of big tech and make your voice heard. Join me on an uncancelable platform where I like to debut my songs and where you can read exclusive commentary from our 45th president, Donald J. Trump. I'll see you on Truth Social, where freedom lives.
Download the Truth Social app or visit truthsocial.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Although I have to say, Rob, that I've always preferred the Brooklyn version of the Lord's Prayer that culminates with "Lead us not into Penn Station."
Yeah, right, right. Even the new one.
You want to talk about evil and the pit of hell? That that captured it for me. But well, can I ask you this? This may be a segue into the election topic. I forget which conservative luminary 20 years ago described our colleges and universities as seminaries of intolerance. And you're at an actual seminary. Right. And of course, it's not a place of intolerance. But and you said before we started going live, you said that you're finding it hard. And I take that seriously because, you are there and your co-students there are asking about the most serious questions about the transcendent versus the imminent, which is the election. Right. But I am curious. I mean, most seminaries that I'm familiar with are the student body and the faculty are pretty liberal.
Yeah.
They want to write a gender neutral Bible and things like that. And I'm not less concerned about that, but are people there worked up about the election? Do they have grief counselors on speed dial in the event Trump wins, or what's the atmosphere? Are you trying to ignore all that?
It's interesting because the Princeton Theological Seminary and Princeton University have the same DNA, right? They were born, it was all a seminary when it started back in 18, whatever. And then as things sort of changed, then the university kind of got more secular and the seminary stayed a seminary. And the seminary was sort of endowed and started by the Presbyterian Church. So Presbyterian Church is still, it is still a seminary for the Presbyterian Church. It is not really a seminary for the Anglican or Episcopal Church that I belong to. So I have to do a little extra stuff just to kind of like keep my thing on. But, and I think this is true of other places too. I don't think it's just Princeton or Princeton Seminary, other div schools, maybe not. But the purposefulness of it, yeah, it's definitely liberal, and that and some of it's liberal in a lovely way, exactly as it's supposed to be. But the purposefulness of it kind of helps. As I said to somebody, they didn't get it. The other thing is there's not a lot of laughs here. Like my D material is getting great response. But this is somebody like, you know, the purposefulness of it keeps the riffraff out. You're here for, you know, the young people are here because they really, really do want to serve their church. And there's also academics and PhDs and people who have like are much more sort of, you know, academic and brilliant. But the foundational thing here is that, okay, we're doing something, there's something bigger that we're a part of and we're supposed to be doing and it's guiding us. And that is different, I think, fundamentally from the secular institution across the street, which is Princeton University, which I think is extremely quiet these days. It's a beautiful campus. Princeton is one of the most beautiful places in the world. I hope that whatever happens in a couple of weeks is going to be digested by these people in a way that doesn't cause them too much distress or too much, you know, I mean, either way, right? I mean, or too much whatever. But it is a different way to look at. There's not a lot of activism on the seminary campus, and I walk through the university campus every day, and I see posters and stuff, but nobody's yelling and screaming on the quad anymore. They might start, but for right now they're kind of not. And I think the seminary doesn't have that. I mean, the seminary has a vocal group of students who wear a keffiyeh and are concerned about what's happening in Gaza, right? They're not shutting anything down, and they had a counter demonstration to somebody who spoke at the convocation. And that lasted 10 minutes, and it was respectful and written down and wasn't, you know, no, it was no rotating hunger strikes, put it that way. I don't know. Maybe it's the purposefulness of it that helps. It's like, you know, you don't hear a lot of these things going on in STEM campuses, right? Because people are like, well, I got a plot problem set I got to do. Right. So maybe there's that going on, or maybe it's just a sense that like, if you're really thinking about bigger things, everything else seems like a smaller thing.
Well, I'd be curious to see exactly how politically sophisticated they are, or whether they're even interested in becoming politically sophisticated, because you can say that it's a basic biblical principle, a basic human principle to take care of the poor, for example, to be aware of those less fortunate than yourselves. Good thing to think about. It's how you do mm-hmm. that matters. And yeah. How you do that is a whole different series of expectations and assumptions about government and people and the rest of it. And I just wonder, you, Rob, can be that guy who says, yes, indeed, but what if an abundant society, what if prosperity, rising tide and all the rest of that,
right.
What if that is the most efficacious means to securing liberty, justice, and abundance for all? And what if we do that by removing the state's intercession so that individuals, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to look at you like this thing coiled around a tree that's saying, there's an apple. There's a really tasty apple. Why don't you take a bite out of that? I mean, you can really be the dark prince of this whole thing. Would they regard you as such if you started talking about these things?
Interesting question.
Even in your squishy manifestation.
Here's the good news. The good news that I've this is just what I've encountered, was that there was a lot of talk at the beginning, especially at the beginning of the semester, and for the new students like me, of the diversity of opinion that they're going to encounter. And one professor actually said, look, you're going to be in this class. You need to know that there are people in this class who vote differently from you, who think differently from you, who worship differently from you. And that is what makes us seminary and a place of learning and not something else. And I remember thinking, like, wow, that's really amazing. I think they're like, they must be, I hadn't started yet, so I couldn't tell whether, is this something to tell the conservatives? Hey, listen, you keep your whatever. Or is this something to tell the liberals? Hey, listen, you keep your mitts off the conservatives. I don't know. I couldn't tell. What I discovered later was that part of it is just what happens is that this is a very popular place to come, unlike sort of the other two, the big divinity schools in the country. One at Harvard and the one at Yale. This is a place to come if you actually believe in something and you actually have some kind of faith, really. I mean, I don't even mean that as a joke. And so people come, and Princeton has just traditionally, Princeton University has had a lot of connections to the South. So people come from, there are a lot of people here from the South. And I think the warning has always been to them, listen, we're going to be in a class with people and your professors are academics, believing academics, but academics, and you're going to learn stuff that you may not have encountered in your time in your, you know, church. For instance, the two very distinct, different, separate creation stories that begin the book that we call the Bible, right? By chapter three, you're already confused. And right. That is part of the, you know, as they say in software development, that is a feature, not a bug. And you're just going to have to put up with that. Because I think there have been stories of very, very bright, enthusiastic students coming here from very, very, very committed faith backgrounds. And they come and they spend, you know, a semester reading the Old Testament, which a lot of people haven't done, and or reading the Hebrew or reading the Greek, and then the New Testament, and then having a freak out and say, oh, my God, nothing I was told is true. It's all a lie. It's all been a lie. And they, you know, they call home, and usually often there's a parent there or a grandparent or a male relatives who's a pastor. And they're like, they said, sometimes these things, they turn these absolutely 100% faithful Christians into total atheists. And they don't want to do that either, but they do want you to read the book because it's the book and the book's complicated. And so I think part of that was like, hey, don't freak out when you can't answer the question, who parts the Red Sea, with a clear cut answer. And that, again, that's like, I don't know, we're still talking about the primeval history here. I mean, not primeval history, we're talking about the early, I don't know, page 50? And already we're confused? Like, all right. So I love that part because, as you know, I'm Mr. Squishy in the middle.
Well, that's great, because I would hate to think that the diversity of opinion means people who believe in taxing unrealized capital gains above 500,000 versus people who believe in taxing them right. above 600,000. We've got all walks of life here ideologically. Would you say, and I'll leave it at this, because we could just sit here and talk for hours, but we do have an election.
Yeah, sure.
Are most of the people who are coming to the school Episcopalian? Would you say that they're more inclined to biblical literalism or more inclined to sort of the idea that it's a set of tales, divinely inspired, mind you, but nevertheless not a direct transcription of what happened? We're not talking 7 days. We're talking 7 days describing a vast period of time that only God can comprehend.
Yeah. No, right. I don't really know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I suspect that the thing about biblical literalists are, the univocalists maybe, is that it's a hard time. You have a hard time if reading the actual Bible because it's got all these doublets in it, all these little things in it that just seem like, okay, well, this is, I see here where the P author of the Old Testament came in and, you know, the put it this in front of the thing. And I could say the Exodus is a perfect example because you have like this the story of leaving Egypt, which is this great adventure tale, and then that's the first half, and then you have this song in the middle of it, which is ancient and older than anything, and then the third part of it on the other side of it is this list of laws, the rules, and they didn't all come at the same time, and so that's kind of what's lovely about it. And I mean, look, the Bible's a pretty good book; it can stand up.
Hey folks, I'm John Rich. Just as wokeness and censorship have subverted the music industry, they've also crushed free expression on social media. Censors have suspended social media users, canceled entire news channels, obliterated online discussion platforms, and even banished a sitting American president from big tech platforms. Well, I'm here to say there's a place for you, a place where patriots can speak freely without fearing some unknown, unseen speech enforcer that wants to shut you down. That place is called Truth Social, a free speech social media platform that hosts breaking news, TV streaming channels, and powerful commentary on all the issues facing our great nation. Break free of big tech and make your voice heard. Join me on an uncancelable platform where I like to debut my songs and where you can read exclusive commentary from our 45th president, Donald J. Trump. I'll see you on Truth Social, where freedom lives.
Download the Truth Social app or visit truthsocial.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
WowVegas.com.
At WowVegas.com, America's best social casino. With more than 900 free play games at your fingertips. Winners say wow when they play at WowVegas.com. Experience the real thrills of Vegas at home or on the go. Claim your free coins today at WowVegas.com.
WowVegas is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
WowVegas.com.
As a screenwriter, that must be frustrating for you. First act's great, sets it up. We wander.
Right.
It literally wanders a little in the second part. But the third act ought to really clinch it. So, Stephen, do you have anything else to the subject? Because like I say, I look forward to a Rob Long podcast that is exclusively devoted to his experiences at the school.
I lay down a marker with Rob that I want to talk to him at least after the first year's under your belt. I mean, not just yet. And, you know, we get into things like, Karl Barth versus Thomas Aquinas, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Wow.
That's right. Right. Well, just one brief comment, though, about James's question, which is, literal reading or, figurative reading. And it seems to me depends on what you mean by literal. I believe you can take the Bible literal if you accept its premise that it's divinely inspired and revelation from God. If you start there, then it seems to me you don't have to have the position that it literally meant a 7 24-hour days creation, since the sun wasn't created till what, the third day, right? Which sort of defies our sort of categories there. But once you accept that it's serious, then it seems to me that that dichotomy of what we sometimes say, the fundamentalists who take every word literally, that starts to dissolve a bit. And you think of it much more deeply and seriously, I think. And I'll just stop there because I will say I did read Leon Cass's book on Genesis. I don't know if you know that book.
Oh, Rob. I do. Yeah.
It's worth reading. But of course, it is 500 pages and very dense. And he's doing a sequel on Exodus that will also be 500 pages.
Yes,
it may be done by now. I'm not sure. But
you could be there forever. I mean, you could spend a lifetime studying the first two chapters of this Bible.
Correct.
The great thing is at the end of it, Rob, I suppose, when your last class is on Revelations, which is just
at the end of it, everything. That's the great.
A dandy way to wrap up the show right there with the six heads and all the rest of the choirs and the trumpets. Well, great. Pin in that. Move on. Next topic, elections. Anybody has been captured following what Kamala Harris said in her recent appearances, where there seems to be a great uneasiness settling in on some parts of the left, that she may not be able to close the deal, that maybe the joy of Brett Summer has evaporated and people are seeing somebody who just really isn't up to the task. What do you sense from the nation's reaction and eventual adjudication of the merits of Kamala Harris?
Well, I mean, I have to say that her team was right, 100% right, when they kept her out of interviews. They kept her from talking. that was a turns out that was a pretty good strategy. Mm-hmm. 'Cause now we've heard her talk and we've seen her handle really easy questions from incredibly sympathetic interviewers, by the way. And she just doesn't seem to have some kind of, I find it generationally very strange that she doesn't. And I'm actually from Kamala Harris, who she didn't arrive here. I mean, it's hard to believe she didn't arrive here an unaccomplished person. She was a prosecutor and she ran a statewide. It wasn't a great statewide, but she ran a statewide. And so she knows how to think on her feet. She clearly does, because she was she went to trial. She was in court. So I mean, this terror and almost choosing to say nothing to me is the most charitable way I can put it is that it's just the terror of going from basically small time elections to running big time elections where you're in charge instead of taking orders. That could be. It could also be that she's just a deeply unserious person, which I think is also true. But I think there's a third thing happening, which is I don't think that she thinks that she needs to do any of this or have any. This is what I find most disturbing, is that I don't think she thinks of these things as deficiencies. She thinks she's just going to I'm just have to do this to become president. But when I'm president, I sit there and preside and gab and chit chat and run a meeting, which I can run. And I feel like she is a classic. And I say this as a member of my generation, because she's in my generation. She's a consultant, mm-hmm. and she's running it like she's a McKinsey consultant. And so her answers are word salad and nonsense. And you think, well, I'm not hiring a consultant. I'm hiring a president. And I think that to me is that, and she's not even a very good one. I mean, she wouldn't be at McKinsey or BCG or something. She'd be at one of the grade D ones, because her word salads aren't that good. But I've been around enough consultants to know that they can talk for 30 minutes and it sounds good, but it means nothing. And she could talk for 30 minutes and it doesn't sound good.
No.
But she is the generation of Americans that believe that the highest form of enterprise is a consultancy. And unfortunately, that is not the job that she is auditioning for.
Yeah, I keep expecting her to offer concave solutions to convex problems.
Right.
The ideal consultant cliche, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the way I've been putting it is that, we can talk about the polls if you want, but the body language of the body politic is clearly signaling discomfort on all sides with her. And her brat summer mm-hmm. has become, as I'm calling it, a splat fall. And look, I mean, I've talked about this before, I think, but... Look, her reputation in California is that she was a terrible boss. I've known people who worked for her in the AG's office, Democrats, career Democrats, who hated her and said she was just the most horrible person to work for. She had, 92% turnout, turnover in the vice presidential staff. And that's an amazing thing, because people kill to have those jobs in the White House, and they're willing to put up with a lot of misery to be in the center of the action there, right? And then finally, there was a story that came out a few months ago that now... I think you mentioned that she took a couple days off to prepare for the CNN town hall where she did miserably. The story out 3 or 4 months ago that sometime in the last couple of years, she was invited to one of David Bradley's famous salons. Now, David Bradley, for listeners who don't know, he was big. He used to own the Atlantic before Lorene Powell Jobs bought it, and major publisher, major man around Georgetown, has a big house up on Embassy Row, I think in Massachusetts Avenue. And he has these salons where you're invited to dinner. It's all high-powered people. She was so nervous about going that she had her staff do a rehearsal dinner for her. And they thought about, well, maybe we should actually serve wine at these rehearsals.
Ooh.
And what are people going to be asking me? What do I need to talk about? So she was that nervous about going to what ought to be layup for anybody in Washington. Because everybody in Washington, I mean, I lived there 15 years. James has been there. The Georgetown cocktail party is what you aspire to, and it's easy. There was no pressure on her whatsoever, but she was nervous about it, which shows that she's not ready for prime time. And we can go on all day about that.
No. Yeah, but I'm just taking as a given, which maybe not, but I when you say somebody's just dumb, then it's over, right? They're just dumb, right? And that she's dumb. I don't think she's dumb. I mean, she passed the bar. She did all this other. It wasn't a great law school. All those things. I just did a podcast with John Podoretz, and John Podoretz is very, very critical of her. She's an idiot, and I get it. I get that answer. I just mean that it feels to me like she doesn't she has no courage, which you desperately need to join this campaign this late. There are enormous. Her problem is really simple as a political problem. It's not that hard. She needs men, and she needs moderates. That's it. And she needs to paint the other guy as a lunatic. Well, he's going to do that part himself. And all she needs is that part. And she seems to have a hard time connecting to that. And the boilerplate answers that she could have given, that she could have memorized, that aren't, you know, complicated, are just show this kind of terror and fear and unwillingness to sort of act like she wants it. You know, it's a weird way. It's almost like she thinks that, okay, well, I'm going to, it's like a gig. It's like, no, you have to have a, you have to want to take the country in a direction. You know, when you if you answer a question, hey, look, this is a very complicated question, then you have to give me a complicated answer. You can't just, you know, I find it amazing looking at her now, just how terrible this campaign has become, because it started so great. I mean, you got to give him credit. She raised $1 billion. She made all the right phone calls. She looked really good. I mean, I was saying a month ago, you know, weirdly about her, she's actually good at this. And it's all kind of, you know what? It's all kind of evaporated the way it does when the consultant packs up and leaves and the company's left to actually make the things work.
She was good at this. She was good at the, when everybody saw the picture, you know, the big smiling picture and, oh, different kind of energy. So different than the glowering orange man and the rest of it. I mean, a lot of that was just vibe and imagery. I think part of the problem, I don't disagree with anything either of you said, but I think part of her problem and her inability to comport herself well and impressively in these interviews is that she's suffering, she's experiencing the consequences of a lifetime of intellectual disinterest isn't the word, lack of curiosity.
Isolation.
Isolation, but also lack of curiosity. Just somebody who's hungry about the world will know enough about it to be able to BS mm-hmm. for a few minutes when the question mm-hmm. is asked. They'll have a template about that issue in their head because their mind has ranged all over the place. That's, you know, that's just kind of what you would like to expect. She doesn't have that.
I mean, so, right. I mean, Bill, if I can interrupt, I mean, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, remember, both had taught constitutional law in law schools, Clinton in Arkansas, Obama in Chicago. And I know people who had classes from Obama at Chicago Law School, and they said he knew what the conservative arguments were. He assigned us to read Robert Bork in our classes with him. So they knew what the other side thought. I don't think Harris has ever for a moment picked up a copy of National Review or any other or heard any conservative argument ever. Right.
Yeah, it's I find it very baffling. I mean, and especially, I mean, because I it's like we're looking at these two desperately bad circus bears grappling. And, you know, like last week, suddenly, Trump goes to McDonald's.
Oh, Rob, you as a show business person, you have to have thought that was a masterstroke.
It was brilliant. Oh, I totally. Yeah. No, I think it was absolutely. But I thought to myself, like, it took them how long? It's October 15th, whatever. He was October 20th. It's a couple weeks before the election. And this is the first time this guy has done this. The laziness with which that campaign has like, well, let's just give him another rally. Another rally. No. You put him at McDonald's. I would take him to Costco. I would have him do the checkout at Home Depot. I would have this guy, this billionaire, orange billionaire at every real job in America once a week. Don't do the stupid rallies where he blathers and lies his way through 50 minutes of nonsense. He was great at McDonald's, and people, the voters like to see that the president knows what a McDonald's looks like inside. And I mean, yeah, he was there 15 minutes. He made some jokes. That should have been, I tell you, I honestly believe if from Labor Day on, he had a job a week and not a stupid, embarrassing, insulting rally, he'd be 20 points up.
It would have to be a job a week because people absolutely would forget the next thing. We've moved on past the assassination attempts, plural, and he would have to, you're right, Rob, do this every single day. Rotate through all of the various franchises, sparing none.
He'd love it, too.
And putting, I mean, just imagine the jokes, the self-deprecating jokes that could be done if he put on the orange apron. You know, you just sit there and talk about how it matches his
Costco and the rest. I mean, at Home Depot. Yeah.
Before we go any farther, though, I'm going to welcome Rob back by forbidding him the opportunity to bust my segue. I'm simply going to go right into a spot.
Oh yeah, no. Listen. I want to say this, James. I, as you know, I'm on my way to taking religious orders, and so I'm trying to take seriously the only two commandments that we as Christians have to follow, which is one is like worship your God. Honor your God. Basically, gratitude. And the second is to love your neighbor. And so in the spirit of that, I'm not going to interrupt your segue to your spot.
It is a philosophical disquisition I would love to have. If somebody is saying they are not interrupting your spot, but yet they are interrupting your spot, does intention count or does the effect of their actions? We can talk about that a little bit. But first,
it's a Christian paradox, James, is what I think it is.
Certainly is. But there's no paradox when it comes to data security. You need it. You want it. And it's a big problem.
Because when you interrupt somebody's spot, you know it. I mean, you do it. You just go right to it. It's like a... with intention. That's the most important thing. That's actually the most important thing theologically, I think, is intention. Is like, this is what I have, you know, this is, there's no half measure. Anyway,
right.
You were in the middle of something.
You're right. And if someone believes actually that their interruption is actually improving, that it's a bit that is enjoyed by all, then there's a little bit of the overweening ego in there that says that you're not actually doing a good thing. You're doing something to aggrandize yourself. Say, having said that, I would like to remind people, I had made a point about data security and why it's important. I thought this all the time. I was just over in Europe, and every time I waved my phone at something or tapped this or accept or the rest of it, I thought, oh, exactly where is my data going? I'm on another continent. Who's going to have it? Listen, whenever you shop online or you start a digital subscription or you download an app, you end up releasing a great deal of personal information, which can be sold or stolen, which is even worse. Now, thankfully, Incogni is your digital shield against even the most sophisticated threats. Incogni reaches out to data brokers on your behalf and requests your personal data removal with a firm, professional hand, tackling any pushback they might try to throw you away. They provide unmatched identity protection, guarding you sensitive information such as, you know, social security numbers, login details. They guard that it's in a high security vault, protecting you from potential identity theft and ensuring your personal information remains confidential. We shouldn't have to worry about that, but we do. And it's a good thing they're on our side. Why delay? Act now with Incogni. Your go-to solution for keeping data brokers at bay. You got a network of friends or family? Well, you can visit Incogni.com to start safeguarding your digital life today. And here's the bonus. You can try Incogni risk-free for 30 days with a full refund if it does not meet your expectations. So what's to lose? Take your personal data back with Incogni. Use code RICOCHET at the link, and you'll get 60% off an annual plan. That's INCOGNI.com/ricochet. INCOGNI.com. And we thank Incogni for sponsoring this and being a new sponsor of the Ricochet Podcast. And I wonder, however, if it's Incogni. I want to see, you know, the Italian language lessons that I took back in college make me want to Incogni, but probably not. And anybody who speaks Italian has probably just wet themselves in my accent. All right. Back to the lecture that we have. Now, Rob was saying that it'd be a great thing if Trump continued to do this, but the blowback would be so delicious. I mean, the fact that one McDonald's trip generated so many pieces of hair on fire about, you know, he wasn't wearing a hairnet. Two of them I saw about that. Somebody else went back and pulled the records to see. Well, you know that
McDonald's? No, it's not real hair.
That is hairnet.
It's an antimicrobial fiber.
Well, I would like to know that, but you know, for being the most vetted candidate in modern history, somehow we haven't gotten around to the microfiber nature of its hair. But they don't seem. The latest thing, of course, and I'm going to say something which I know is going to be shocking to you guys, but it appears to me as if they're trying to make Donald Trump sound like Hitler. I know, or a fascist. Now, we all are old enough to know that every single president of a Republican nature in our lifetime has been Hitler. And I was the one, if you go back and search in LexisNexis, I am convinced that the first mention of this phrase is mine a long time ago, which was, in the future, everyone will be Hitler for 15 minutes on the world. And I mean, Reagan was Bush Hitler, is one word. And Kamala Harris, I believe, gave a speech today where she called him a fascist. And these people have very little understanding what fascism is, other than it's the things I don't like.
Yeah. Yeah, they know they don't like it.
They don't like it. So, I'll give it to you then. Is ninth time the charm for the old Hitler fascist thing?
You would have thought that at some point. Let's do this. Let's stipulate that Trump is as awful as they say he is, or that Rob sometimes says he is. I think he's not. But all right. The point is, you would have thought that somebody in the Democratic hierarchy would have at some point have read the old fable of the little boy who cried wolf. and reflect that they shouldn't have made such damn fools out of themselves going back 70 years now. By the way, I have all receipts on this. The first instance I can find was 1940, when Henry Wallace and the Democrats charged that Wendell Willkie, he was an old one-worlder, right? Wendell Willkie was Hitler's preferred candidate in the election that year. And by the way, Hitler was a real thing going in 1940, right? I sort of remember this from the history books, yeah. And then, you know, Tom Dewey was Hitler. That's what Harry Truman said, actually right about the same week in the 1948 election cycle, late October. And then Goldwater, oh my God. I mean, I go on for pages about all the ways that he was made out to be Hitler. And then you go on down the list. You know, Reagan was Hitler, right? The only Republican who was never called Hitler was Eisenhower. If you think about it for 2 seconds, hard to make it stick on the guy who actually routed Hitler on the battlefield, right?
Right, right.
But so, I mean, I think they made damn fools of themselves saying this. They can't seem to come up with anything original, and it just shows their desperation in my mind. They just said one other thing. Well, no, I'll stop there and let Rob weigh in on the Hitler question.
I was just going to say the fascist thing. The thing about fascism is like, I mean, okay, I stipulate that fascism is bad. We don't like it, but it doesn't seem like it's that much of a, you know, it's like racist, you know, it's like, okay,
it doesn't have
any value. And I don't think it's connecting to the voters the way what you want to do. They're failing at that one thing, which is we've seen it. We've seen this movie already, the Trump movie. She's change. She's going to bring back change. We need change. Turn the page. He's exhausting and crazy and incompetent in many ways. And I mean, there's a little bit of a trap there for him, for them, because in my opinion, the thing that disqualifies him the most, aside from post-election nonsense, is his handling of COVID, which was atrocious and wrong.
Yeah.
But they agreed with it. So that's the problem, right? Like, it really was that right. They agreed with everything he did, they were applauding. Like, if you could shut down the country more, they would like to do that. Like, the Trump-Gavin Newsom plan for the United States economy was to destroy it.
Yeah, he wasn't fascist enough about COVID.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yes. Right. I mean, we need a little Ron DeSantis, Brian Kemp to keep the trains running on time in this country. Right. And so they're not connecting to what they should be connecting to. And weirdly, he isn't either, but I think he's going to start. But it's banana. It's like a faculty lounge argument, which they still don't know is not America.
Well, I mean, the proximate cause of this, the charge of this week, is that General Flynn said that Trump said, "I wish I had generals like
Kelly.
Hitler." General Kelly, sorry. General Kelly. Oh, God, yeah. Right.
That's Flynn was the one that, right. Flynn's a different one, very different general.
Yeah. Maybe he is the kind of general. Okay. The point is that apparently Trump can't name a single World War II German general. Apparently he'd never heard of Erwin Rommel when somebody brought him up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, you take this seriously? Trump said this 4 years ago now, and we're only hearing about it now, 2 weeks before an election. Gosh, that seems awfully convenient, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was saying that he just wanted to, you know, the sort of generals who leave a bomb under the table and then that exceeds and take a phone call outside. Yeah, it's. I mean, part of the problem is that we already had 4 years of Donald Trump, and he did not annex the Sudetenland.
The Babylon Bee has one of their typical classic headlines. It was, Democrats tell us Trump wanted to be Hitler in his first term, but simply forgot.
Right, indeed. Well, the whole idea of nothing outside the state, nothing that basic fascist concept is not something that sticks well on the right, because the left is very, very, progressives are very proud to tell us how much everything should be gathered into the loving embrace of the state, of the village, of the rest of it. We must have collective effort for climate change. We must have collective effort to reduce systemic isms and all the rest of it. I mean, they're all about using the instruments of the state, maximum power, in order to force, coerce, change human behavior. So I find it amusing when they make that charge, still believing somehow in their heart of hearts that it's 1968 and that they're the party of just nothing but free love and absolute total free expression and freedom for all and the rest of it, when they've morphed into the very sort of authoritarian apparatus that they supposedly hated in 68. But moving beyond Trump and Kamala, something even more important, British election interference in American politics. This is a weird, strange story.
I love this story.
And Stephen, I think you might be the one to describe it for people.
Yeah, so Keir Starmer, the new Prime Minister of Britain, with the, one of the largest Labour landslides ever. They've got like 425 seats out of the 650 that you have in the House. And by the way, the opinion polls show that Starmer is more unpopular than any new Prime Minister has been in the last 50, 60 years. I mean, he's cratering already. And in the midst of this, he decides that he and his party, they want to come over en masse, like 100 members of the House of Commons want to come over and campaign for Kamala Harris. Now, there's two things about this. Where are the screams of foreign interference in our elections? And second, how stupid can Starmer be? I mean, with all the momentum right now behind Trump and the likelihood that Trump is going to win, why would you want to alienate for no good reason of your own the next president of the United States, who you're going to have to deal with about Ukraine and the European Union and all kinds of other things? It's just, to me, it just shows how incredibly inept Starmer is as a political leader.
I was just over there, and you're right. He's not loved. And there are a series of steps that were being touted in the Telegraph. Yeah, I know, the Telegraph, but it's not exactly a raving right-wing paper. The Telegraph was noting that there's been a series of art movements in number 10 Downing Street, paintings that have been removed because they have the wrong message. Sir Walter Raleigh, he's out. Elizabeth I, she's out of here. Slavery for both of them. Gladstone, I think, got the boot at some point. She took down Margaret Thatcher's painting because it was on the wall, and he said it had nothing to do with her politics. He just didn't like paintings in which someone was looking down on him. And I thought, if you took Thatcher's portrait and put it on the floor, he would still be looking down on you, Mr. Turner. The other thing they recently took out was William Shakespeare. Apparently, that one had to go and is going to be replaced by something that's a little bit more diverse, wokey, sparkly, etc. They took all of the paintings of men out of 11 Downing Street, a meeting room where they meet four people, and replaced them with women or pictures of women in order to show their commitment to empowering and the rest of it. So these are kind of tone-deaf things. They're statements that you make to placate a certain number of your base, but they fall like a cold coal on the floors of the rest of the people in the country who are wondering exactly why this was necessary exactly to do. But that's what you get from all the year zero-ish type. We think it's bad over here. There was a proposed legislation that new rules to govern whether or not a pub owner has an obligation to interfere when the banter between some mates in the back having a pint becomes injurious to the sensibilities of various protected groups. It's in order to keep the workers' health and safety, of course, that they might themselves, having their ears abraded by an off-color joke, would suffer harm and distress. So now there's talk of that the publicity have to be banter cops, that everybody has to look around their shoulder and see if there's somebody who's taking down what they said in the local boozer. And, you know, I talk to people who've been labor all their life, and they grit their teeth and they just sort of despair of this nonsense ever ending.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I remember years, this is sort of somewhat similar, but years ago when New York City had a smoking in restaurants ordinance. And of course it got, you know, everybody knew it was going to happen, and those restaurant owners hated it because it's like, come on, let me just do my thing. And you had to go, when you went to a restaurant, I'm an old man, right? Remember when you go to a restaurant, they go, smoking or non?
Right.
And you go, it doesn't matter. Like, because there's smoking section, non-smoking section. And of course it was like masks, no masks. It was stupid because like there'd be a table that was in the smoking section next to a table that was in the non-smoking section.
Yeah.
But you had to designate a certain number of tables, a certain amount of things. You had to have a smoking area. It was incredibly, incredibly onerous. And at the city council, Andre Soltner, the great chef Andre Soltner, who ran one of the best restaurants ever called Lutèce, you know, he cooked almost every meal there for 30 plus years. When he retired, it was a front page story of the New York Times when he retired. And somebody asked his wife, well, what are you going to do with all your free time now? And she said, she'd lived in New York City for 33 years. Because, you know, I've always wanted to see a Broadway play. But of course, she could never see one because she was always working.
Right.
Anyway, so he went down to town hall and he was like arguing against this. He said, what are you doing? I've run a restaurant in the city for 30 years. I think I know best how to keep my customers happy. I think I know how to run a restaurant. Why are you telling me how to run a restaurant? And they looked at him. They acted like he was what's the worst thing you could be? Like he was some kind of fascist, right? When in fact, he was completely right. He's like, if I don't serve my customers, They will not come. That is the only regulation I need. And he was right. And it's the same thing for these pub owners. Like, if I let things get out of hand and I don't step in, everybody who's right. ever been behind the bar knows if, you know, there's a time when you step in, there's a time when you move people away. That's the job of a bartender, partly. Like, you don't need a commission to tell you how to do that. Yeah. And if you do, you're going to be out of business soon anyway.
Well, if there's one thing that the ale of Britain and the steak of New York have in common, it's they both have a certain caloric content. If you have too much of those, or if you just simply want to watch what you weigh, you have to pay attention to your metabolism. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Lumen, my friends, Lumen. It's the world's first handheld metabolic coach. It is a device that measures your metabolism through your breath. I've used this thing. I have one of these things. It's really cool. You pick it up, you blow on it, you look at the app, you make this ball sort of bounce up and stabilize, and the rest is very easy. The app then lets you know if you're burning fat or burning carbs, and it gives you tailored guidance to improve your nutrition, your workouts, your sleep, and even your stress management. All you have to do is to breathe into your Lumen first thing in the morning, and you'll know what's going on with your metabolism, whether it's fats or carbs you're burning. I'm telling you, I know what I eat. This thing knows exactly what I'm burning. It's not voodoo. It's actual science. It gives me a personalized nutrition plan for the day based on my measurements. I can say, hey, I can have this many carbs, which is great. I love carbs. Let's have some carbs. You can also breathe into it before and after your workouts and your meals so you know exactly what's going on in your body in real time. And Lumen will give you tips to keep you on top of your health game. Your metabolism is your body's engine. It's how your body turns the food you eat into fuel that keeps you going. Because your metabolism is at the center of everything your body does, optimal metabolic health translates into a bunch of benefits. Easier weight management, improved energy levels, better fitness results, better sleep, etc. Lumen gives you recommendations to improve your metabolic health. So, if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me/ricochet to get 15% off your Lumen. That is lumen.me/ricochet for your 50% off your purchase. Trust me, you'll love this thing. From the unboxing to the using, it's a cool device. And we thank Lumen for sponsoring this, the Ricochet Podcast. Before we go, gentlemen, anything else that you would like to discuss? Elon Musk say anything this week that we should be worried about? I'm never really worried about anything that he says. I mean, he'll repost something on X, Twitter, and then say either wild or 2 exclamation points. And from that, I'm supposed to infer that he, too, is Hitler's handmaiden.
Yeah. Well, actually, I make a comment on Rob's point and your question about having a commission to regulate what goes on in pubs. Look, I always show to students the public opinion polls showing the complete collapse in confidence in our institutions. And one of the reasons for that is that our government is no longer competent at doing its basic tasks, like, oh, I don't know, policing the streets, providing quality public education, picking up the garbage, right? But they want to start policing what we think and what we say. Because their competence apparently extends into that, right? And I think this is why people don't respect their institutions anymore, is they aren't any good. And the media, same thing, right? People can see that the media is completely partisan and superficial and so forth. And that explains, I think, some of Trump's appeal. Now, he's crude about it, but when he says we never win again, I think a lot of people import into that exactly that sentiment that, gosh, nothing seems to work. It's supposed to work. And meanwhile, they're telling us we have to wear masks. We have to police what we say. Right. We're going to censor Twitter and so forth. And so here's where, let me try this, James. I'm going to see if I can reach concord with Brother Rob, since I don't know if we're going to see before the election, Brother Rob. But let's stipulate that Trump may not deserve to win for all of the criticisms that you and many others make.
Right.
But I believe the left richly deserves to lose to Trump. Not just any Republican, they deserve to lose to Trump.
Wow, that's so, that's a theological question.
Yeah, I meant to be, right?
Well, I don't think anybody deserves, I believe in salvation by grace, so okay. I'm not sure that.
Well, we may need that after Trump wins.
We definitely need it. Okay. I think that we as a country and as a culture deserve President Trump or President Harris. I don't think these are two of our best choices. I don't think they're two of our best leaders. I think we're kind of in a decadent phase where we think that all the questions are small and little, and they can be sort of either insulted away on X or word saladed away in some other way. And I think that the country kind of agrees, right? And I, what I object to about from my liberal friends is this idea that this is somehow new. And that, oh, you suddenly discovered this. Like, and it just drives me up the wall because it's like, this is not new. The stupefaction of American political conversation is something that's, I mean, I hate sounding like the kid saying you started it, but you started it. And congratulations, because the left and I think in many ways the institutional left simply operated on this assumption that the grownups will always be in charge. The grownups will always hold me back. I can do whatever I want. I'm a spoiled kid, and it's okay because they're gonna pull me back from the abyss. They're gonna keep this from getting too weird. So, you know, we can say nasty, horrible, ridiculous things about President George W. Bush or President H.W. Bush, for that matter, or Mitt Romney or anybody we want, and we can go way over the top on that. But, you know, that's okay because we're the kids and we're allowed to do that. And the grownups will never do that. And now they've discovered, no, you've created a whole new political movement. You've energized a political movement. I mean, half the people, a huge portion of the energy in the Republican Party now are people who have been Republican for about 25 minutes. And you created this and you set the table for it. And now guess what? People are coming to eat and they're not the people you expected. And now you want to put the toothpaste back in the tube and say, oh no, can we just please go back to when it was nice? And if you were a sentient conservative or even center right figure of a certain age, you're like, well, you guys hated all the Republicans so much. You hated and vilified and called fascists, as James put it. So, like, what do you expect me to do?
But that was yesterday. That was yesterday, and yesterday is
everybody deserves. Everybody deserves what they're going to get, and they deserve to get it good and hard.
Well, yeah, I'm not so inclined to believe so. I like when I say that we deserve this. I don't think we do, but the very fact that everybody has chosen it willingly tells me that I'm probably wrong. But I'm many things. What I don't know is, Robbie, you had a piece for commentary about the Daily Wire, Matt Walsh's Am I Racist? Tell us a little bit about that on the way out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to, I mean, in show business, there's a crisis of comedy. They're looking for comedy. You know, what makes people laugh? And Matt Walsh and the producer of the Daily Wire, Jeremy Boring, who's a really smart guy, and Ben Shapiro, of course, they sort of produced this movie. And Matt goes around and he has these, I mean, it's like, I don't want to describe it. If you haven't seen it, treat yourself. It's the funniest movie funniest and truest movie you're going to see all year. And it confirms the things that we've all known, which is that the sort of DEI nonsense is nonsense and that it's not really serious and that those people are kind of like off their rocker. All that stuff is in this movie. And what I love about it is that not only do I agree with it and I am applauding to it, I'm also laughing at it because it's like genuinely funny. Mm-hmm. And it is a financial box office success,
which is great.
That is good news for everybody, really.
What it says something about the bubble in which a lot of these people live. If somebody was saying, I want to do a movie on what is a conservative, and they wanted to talk to me, and they called me up and I said, sure. And I show up and it's John Stewart in a Groucho glasses with a nose. And I would say, but you're John Stewart. Matt Walsh can go to all these people and nobody ever says, where have I seen you before? Oh, it was that movie about What Is a Woman that was all over the place. Or it was that Twitter, or the rest of it. No intersection whatsoever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Non-contiguous information streams. Stephen, have you seen the movie? And if so, why not?
Yeah, no, I have seen some clips of it. I haven't seen the whole thing yet. No good reason. I was overseas and whatnot. But the point is it used to be Michael Moore who was the funny guy who would ambush people. And now our team is doing it just as well. And yeah, I mean, Walsh won't be able to get away with that many more times. But it's what you just say is they didn't know who he was. And so they were utterly candid with him. And, you know, and of course, the left, like the devil, Rob, hate to be mocked and laughed at.
Then don't be so funny. As always with commentary columns, I try to like talk more about show business than anything else. But reminding everybody, there's a great long running TV hit called Candid Camera.
Right.
And Alan Funt did it for years. If you're a certain age, not even that old, like you remember Alan Funt and his son Peter took over after Alan got too sick.
I do,
or too old. And there's always been hidden camera shows on TV. This Ashton Kutcher had Punked, and there was like a bunch of them. And the tagline for Canada Camera was, "We catch people in the act of being themselves." Mm-hmm. And it was this wonderful, warm, funny thing with like normal people being normal. And it's just, it's funny.
It was.
And that is exactly what Matt Walsh did. He caught people in the act of being themselves, and they will never forgive him for it.
I believe the Candid Camera grew out of Candid Microphone, which is on the radio, which is a whole different thing. It's like ventriloquism on the radio. I'm not really sure how that works. But yeah. Candid Camera, unfortunately, I think sort of spawned prank culture, which was a lot more boorish and a lot more invasive and mean and the rest of it. But I, too, remember a Candid Camera when I was a kid at Grandpa's place, watching it on whatever night it was. And the sort of little giggle that people got when they realized that they were in this. And the very fact that an entire culture, I mean, the show was very popular. The idea that you might be on Candid Camera was sort of this omnipresent question in the minds of so many millions and
something
millions
weird happened
for decades. You thought you could look around for the camera because Alan Funt with his little bald pate might stick himself off from a potted plant and give you a big smile and say you've just been on the national television. Back before the days where everybody, of course, wanted to be an influencer and make a fool of themselves for absolutely no reason. Having done so that myself here, for a very good reason, to promote Ricochet and to promote Lumen and Incogni, two great products, Lumen for your metabolism, Incogni for your digital safety. And we thank them for sponsoring the Ricochet podcast. We thank Rob Long for coming back, of course. We thank Stephen again, a regular member of the flagship podcast family. And we thank you for going to Apple last week and giving us those 5-star reviews. Really, we thank you. You, on the other hand, who hasn't done it yet, go do it. And also, by the way, if you haven't joined Ricochet, this is a great time because we're having a lot of fun discussing the election, and there are meetups in person.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to have a lot of fun discussing the election afterwards, too, in the member feed. But you got to be a member of the member feed, he said tautologically. That'll do it, guys. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope to see both of you next week. In the meantime, we'll see everybody in the comments at Ricochet 4.0.
See you soon, fellas.
Great to see you, Rob.
Good to see you guys, too.
Yeah.
Bless you, my sons.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.
Hey folks, I'm John Rich. Just as wokeness and censorship have subverted the music industry, they've also crushed free expression on social media. Censors have suspended social media users, canceled entire news channels, obliterated online discussion platforms, and even banished a sitting American president from big tech platforms. Well, I'm here to say there's a place for you. A place where patriots can speak freely without fearing some unknown, unseen speech enforcer that wants to shut you down. That place is called Truth Social, a free speech social media platform that hosts breaking news, TV streaming channels, and powerful commentary on all the issues facing our great nation. Break free of big tech and make your voice heard. Join me on an uncancelable platform where I like to debut my songs, and where you can read exclusive commentary from our 45th president, Donald J. Trump. I'll see you on Truth Social, where freedom lives.
Download the Truth Social app or visit truthsocial.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.